Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right Senator Dan McKay. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, everyone.
And on the political left, Councilwoman Shireen Gourbani. Hi, Shireen. Good to see you again.
Hi, and hello to our listeners.
Shireen and I were able to see each other face-to-face, mask-to-mask, yesterday at a little party that KCBW hosted. It was nice to see you, Shireen. Nice to see our producer, Anthony. Dan, sorry you couldn't join us.
I would like to say I had something else cool to do, and I totally forgot. Oh.
You missed a very windy and very fun picnic.
Oh. Yeah, it was great. But, you know, I put that out there, and then I just feel such a serious, there's almost like there's this cloud over us about, you know, a second uptick of the coronavirus, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing away, the division in our country over these things. So let's talk about them, kind of break it down, try to share some things that might be interesting to our listeners. And let's start with the COVID second surge, if you want to call it that. It clearly seems to be centered in Utah County. It's a problem of what they call unmanaged spread. That means it's not necessarily in the schools or the churches or at workplaces, but it's just the virus out in the wild. We know it has a lot to do with college-age students, and some big news happened yesterday. Dan, did you track what, we're recording this on Wednesday, did you track what the governor did and what the county commission did?
Yeah, so the governor moved, you know, specifically Provo and Orem to orange, right? Separate themselves, and said, you guys are orange. And it's clearly an episode of, and I think our students are figuring this out, but when college was canceled and all the other things going on, you know, it changed the social nature of their lives. And now they're trying to spring back. And I think they're realizing, well, there's some consequences to that. And I think the students will figure it out. But until then, it's probably appropriate for students to be on a heightened deal. And then you've got the Utah County, you know, County Commission last night voting 2-1 to move the county into a mask mandate. And, you know, and all of the interesting elements that that will bring. So it's Utah County is, you know, having some issues, but it'll come around.
Yeah. Shireen, I imagine as a Salt Lake council person, you were really happy to see this happen in Utah County because the connectivity between these two large counties is very high. I know it from the commuting patterns and just from where people live, where people work. Yeah. Love to hear your take on that.
Well, and we had the same thing with, you know, a number of people in Tooele County and certainly also in Davis. And I have long been an advocate for, you know, we talk about a statewide mask mandate. I'm actually truly more in favor of a dense population mask mandate. I think if we could get where people live together in higher concentration under control, it makes sense to me that we would be able to have different restrictions in or very lax restrictions in our much more rural counties. When we see, so, I mean, when you track the numbers that were happening in Salt Lake County before school started, the mask mandate really did seem to be having a positive impact. And when I just traveled around the county, I noticed more people wearing them after that decision was made. Uncomfortable and not a pleasant, you know, I don't think a decision that anybody wants to make. But when we're thinking about how we keep our economy open, how we keep our businesses open, how we re-enter schools, those safety protocols were really important. Now, what we're learning, of course, is that schools maybe aren't really managing this in the way that we need to be to keep it under control because we're seeing high levels of spread in the south end of our county, right? So from Corner Canyon, from Draper, really all over into Riverton, we're seeing higher numbers. And that's
a problem.
It's my
district.
It's your district. And we need to get it under control. Dan, tell me what you're doing to tell your constituents to get it under control.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I've had a lot of constituent outreach on this issue, right? And so weekly I'm reaching out with news, then information, but I'm getting a lot of email back and response. And it's interesting. I would say about 25% of my constituents say we're not doing enough. And then 25% of our constituents saying I'm doing way too much. This is just over the top ridiculous. And I would say there's probably 50% who are silent and not saying anything one way or the other, and really are trying to figure out what the right thing is to do for them and their family every single day. And man, this, it just isn't easy for anyone to make these kinds of decisions. And you know, my heart goes out to the schools and, you know, our teachers and our principals and the school boards. I mean, they are literally on the front lines trying to make decisions. They were never elected or intended to have to try and balance. But I will say this, they are doing a great job of trying really hard to make it so that school can stay open.
Yeah. And I get similar messages. I would say there are those who feel like we've, you know, really failed and that the uptick is a function of that failure. But I do get a number of messages from parents who are just really concerned about what happens if our schools close again. And not just because of the inconvenience, but many of the things we've talked about here before, the connectivity, the mental health of their own children. Like there are a lot of competing interests here. And I just think it's really important that people take this moment seriously, wear their masks, practice social distancing, a cool down period, you know, not gathering in large groups is going to be critical.
Hmm. You know, and I would say to our listeners, keep your knees bent. And that's a sports metaphor for, you know, being able to pivot left, right, do what you need to do. This virus, as I mentioned, is in the wild, and it can do some very difficult things, whether it's human life or hurting our economy. We have clearly entered a new phase. Schools, colder weather, people indoors, virus fatigue, seasonal flu season. These are flashpoints. And so I think behavioral change is very hard, and government's limited in what they can do.
And we are hearing from the CDC that this could be a very dark winter. And we had heard that heading into this in March. And I think people need to mentally prepare for the fact that a mass production of a vaccine is unlikely to come to the general public this winter. This is something that we're talking about into next year. And people have to prepare themselves for that.
Yeah. Hey, so I remember, I'm going to introduce this in a quick but way that won't be intuitive, but I remember when Princess Diana passed away, I remember waking up and going to my door to pick up my paper. It was on the front porch back then, a different world. And I saw the picture of Princess Diana on the above the fold, and I went, oh my goodness, she's died. And I just remember it just hit me so strong. That's the same feeling I had when I got the tweet that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg had died at 87 just a few weeks before the election. Ouch. This is not something our country needed right now. Shireen, I know you are an RBG fan. How would you reflect on this for our listeners?
So I've been thinking a lot about what it meant to have somebody who was such a fierce advocate for genuine gender equality, and pulled a list of some of those, some of the consequences of the work that she had done. In particular, being able to, for a woman to obtain a mortgage without a cosigner, to open a checking account without a male cosigner, to start a business without a male cosigner, to get a credit card without a man, right? These are some of, she laid the groundwork for all of this. In terms of gender parity, that means a lot to me. I also will say, and I might get emotional, the other thing that I've been thinking a lot about is pancreatic cancer. I think maybe listeners know that my mom died of pancreatic cancer. And people typically live, when they are diagnosed, within only 7% of people survive. And they usually die within 3.5 months. And it's just unacceptable, you know? And actually, it's an unusual cancer because so many people die. There's very little research that's actually done to try to figure out what we're going to do. So it's something that I hope, people can pay attention to in this moment. I know a lot of people are calling their senators. I hope that they call them and also ask for research on cancer, because a lot of too many people die.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Shireen. Dan, Justice Ginsburg,
it's super hard to be distant,
statement.
By the way, because in normal circumstances, I want to reach over and put my arm around Shireen. Like, she's just shared a very personal thing with her mom. And Shireen, we love you. I'm sorry. It is tough to lose your mom.
Yeah, you've been there.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Dan, Justice Ginsburg dictated the final statement to her granddaughter, and it read this: "My most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed." How did you? I mean, do you want to defend what's going on? Do you want to give a perspective from the right? I think a president has the constitutional power and ability to appoint, and I don't think you should stop that. But I object to what the Republicans did last time more than to what they're doing now.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there was something to be, to dislike, I guess it would be to argue that last time it really was bad form, I guess some could say. I would say if you look back over history,
abuse of power,
the partisan
stolen seat.
No, I totally disagree with you. See, the president nominated and the Senate is able to confirm or not confirm. I mean, that
is the
process.
But they didn't even hold a confirmation
hearing.
There
is no blank check for confirmation. So at the end of the day, the Supreme, you know, the president did his job and the Senate did their job. I think they chose the wrong talking point 4 years ago. I think the talking point should have been, well, we're going to look at our caucus and look at the process and see if we would like to continue forward. And it looks like we're not going to continue forward. That's what they should have done. Instead, they chose this election year wonkiness, which was a convenient talking point then that's now getting them beat over the head, you know, a few years later. I just want to say Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a competent, intelligent, hard fighting. Like, this woman was relentless, you know, realize like
notorious.
One of the final decisions. Yeah. Notorious. Right. But one of the final decisions that was like the icing on the cake of her legal career was like this obscure gender case where federal statute was treating spouses that were men differently than they were treating women. And as a result, you know, the court struck down the statute. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't agree on a standard of review. I'm getting too lawyerly and people have told me that in the past. I'm talking about a lawyer, but she's phenomenal as a lawyer. And I did meet her one time, and the time that I met her, I was actually, you know, at a function at the Supreme Court and met, Antonin Scalia. And while she wasn't on the, like, announced, like, people to be there, she hung out with Antonin Scalia the entire night, and they literally worked, you know, the room, meeting law students and this kind of stuff. I was in an American Bar Association function, and they spent the entire night meeting with members, you know, that were there. And that was so cool to see two people who were diametrically opposed a lot of times on like a policy standpoint and as the law would turn out, but that they could be such good friends. That made such an indelible impression upon me that I have literally in my life sought out people who think differently than I do to be friends. And I think about that and I contrast that with what's happening today, where people legitimately, I see this all the time. I saw a post on social media yesterday, talked about how they knew a bunch of people in a social situation, and then they got on social media and they found out about this person's politics, and now they don't necessarily want to hang out with that person anymore. And I would just say, we just need less of that and more of the Ginsburg-Scalia relationship in America. And if there was one thing that I hope that people walk away from this is, yeah, the Supreme Court is what it is, but we are better than the Supreme Court. We're better than our executive branch. We're better than our governors. We're better than all of our legislative branches. We can come together. Like, let's be better. Let's find yeah. friends. I mean, Shireen is crazy. Like, she's totally wrong so many times, but like, I totally love the lady. She's awesome. So anyway, yeah. there you go.
Hey, I want to talk more about the local implications and what our senators are saying, but let's take a quick break. I'm Natalie Gochner with Dan McKay and Shireen Gorbani. Stay tuned and we'll talk about country over party in our second segment.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and we want to still talk about the Supreme Court issue and our local senators. I love it when Senator Romney is the center of attention in this country, and he got that this week. Everyone wondered what he was going to do, and he signaled that he's on board with the Senate taking up a new Supreme Court nominee during this election year. And people are saying that it all but ensures a nominee put forward by President Trump will be confirmed. President Trump is suggesting that he's going to nominate a woman. And we're thinking there's a lot there. I don't know how many are on the list, Dan and Shireen, but the one that's caught everybody's attention is this Amy Coney Barrett, who is a Notre Dame professor. And she's been on the list for a while. She's young, impressive woman. They all, if you make it on those lists, you're an impressive person. But Dan, I'd love to hear your take on what Romney has done there and and on this potential nominee.
Yeah, she will be one of the youngest, justices appointed to the Supreme Court, if that's what Trump decides. I mean, she's
in her 30s
years old.
Oh,
48.
Okay. 48.
Yeah, it's hard to get to the top of your career at any point before you're 48. At least that's what I tell myself at 46. I keep hoping I'm getting there, right?
Yeah.
But I think she represents a lot of what I think the Trump administration wants to accomplish with the justice, right? She has been kind of an originalist, a textualist, like Antonin Scalia. She clerked for Justice Scalia. By all accounts, she is a hardworking, intelligent lawyer. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how the dynamic is with the court, see how the court handles most of this and makes this about like the judicial process, as opposed to making it a protest rally about, the pre-election nomination element. So that's kind of what I'm hoping that it becomes about. Obviously, the judicial nominating process as opposed to the alternative. But, who knows? It was a complete circus in the last year.
Shereen, I was hoping and still hoping that President Trump will put forward the name Merrick Garland.
That's wishful thinking.
That would be country over party for me.
Yeah. So, we had when Scalia died, there were 269 days until the election. We are within 40, now it's coming up on 40 days of the election. And the whole debate about, who's being hypocritical or whatever, I'm done with that. But I think the more important thing is that we have a second coronavirus relief package that is absolutely going nowhere. We cannot get the kind of relief out to states or out to individuals that's needed. And instead, we're going to prioritize, we're going to see the Senate prioritize a Supreme Court nomination. That person is very likely to be at the center of decisions that will allow polluters to continue to pollute, will strip away some of our environmental protections. One that I'm deeply concerned about, and I think anyone who listens knows, we have another case on the ACA coming before the Supreme Court. Starting in November. At the heart of that are people with pre-existing conditions. There are 100 million people in this country with pre-existing conditions. The decisions that are made at that court, because they couldn't get the rollback, the Trump administration couldn't get the rollback of protections for people with pre-existing conditions, for people who needed the ACA. They couldn't get that done in the Senate. And so they've moved it through the courts. So if you have a loved one, a neighbor, if you know one of the 65,000 people in this state who's had COVID-19, these are people with pre-existing conditions. And their access to health care in the long term here is on the line. So as much as we can talk about who these nominees are or who they might be, I'm more interested in the long-term decisions and really a court that's moving away from what the general public in this country thinks about big issues like healthcare, like workers' rights, like voter protections. And that's where I think all of us should be very worried about where we're going in these next 40 days. And people are still waiting for a national, testing strategy, I think at this point is beyond this administration's capacity, but a national vaccine strategy, really understanding that we have the supplies and materials that we need to keep people safe through what's going to be a pretty dark winter. There are so many other priorities, and the fact that this has moved in front of the health and safety of Americans is just deeply disturbing to me.
Mm. Well, I think it's going to be a very challenging next 8 weeks, as you have coronavirus doing what it's doing, a nomination battle, an election, and then likely, a protest from the elections. Dan, do you have any advice for our listeners going into this period? Because it feels to me like if I had young children, I would be pulling them together and I would be kind of explaining to them a little bit about history and how these things work and how we get through them and how character matters and values matter. I don't know. I just, if you're young and you have not been through anything like this before, it feels very disorienting.
You've just inspired me. At the
do
moment,
this, Dan, with your kids.
I was just thinking. No, I'm sitting down with my kids. They're sick of hearing from me. I'm going to have Natalie and Shereen come over, and Anthony, you're welcome too. And I want my kids to be able to. Mom and Dad will leave the room, and they can ask you any political questions they want. They can ask you about history. They can ask you, and you guys can just corrupt them with your left wing, you know, ideologies and that kind of stuff. And
are Natalie, you can Natalie bring him around
with yeah, you can bring Natalie around with right wing economic policy and it'll be great. I mean, it'll be a great night. No, I think really what matters is, and I think a lot of people are learning this. And I think we had gotten in the business of being so busy as a society that we kind of forgot a lot of things that were really important. And I'm hearing from people all over the place that they are doing exactly that, Natalie. They're spending more time teaching their kids, talking to their kids about current events and issues and things like that. These conversations are invaluable. And I would just say, if you aren't doing it yet, you're missing out, because these kinds of things are great. And while you're at it, you might as well start with them. A great launching point or springboard is the movie Social Dilemma on Netflix, because I'm telling you, these kids have no idea how much social media can manipulate you. And I'm a believer now. And, you know, you seriously watch that movie and talk that over that with your kids.
Well, and that's certainly happening in our election space as well. I am really concerned about the amount of misinformation that's being spread around from federal races right down to local. And I think it's just so important for people to, if we can, right, I think it's useful to move away from the idea of politics as blood sport and really think about it more as a way that we're trying to create balanced collaboration that can bring together a diversity of ideas to move us forward. And there are, I think, a lot of Utahns in the political middle, much like the space that Natalie often occupies. And politics has become more polarized all the time. But I think what I learn every single day in an elected office is that you have to be able to pull people together. I guess this is back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Bring people together to build community around issues that we're trying to address and work on. And there are many elected people, I think, across partisan lines, certainly in nonpartisan seats, that are trying to get that done and really focusing on that and trying to figure out how you can help and where you can find a role for yourself in this time has made me feel incredibly useful in a time that feels so frustrating. And I hope that others can find some solace in that, too.
There's this interesting balance you have to find between knowing enough and speaking out enough to make change and not becoming radicalized in a way that is hurtful to you as a person or to your society. Dan and Shireen, the body cam footage that was released of the Salt Lake City police officer shooting the 13-year-old boy with autism, that was a hard one to take. Yeah. Now, there's one you should talk to your kids about, Dan.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we've been part of the, you know, policy group really, and you know, it's been my bill that's actually been modeled throughout the country now on body camera footage and that kind of stuff, and we're going to be revisiting again this year. But it's clear, you know, we continue to see that law enforcement are constantly put into a mental health counselor situation. Mm-hmm. That I don't know that we've
and they've got a gun
for.
On their side. Yeah.
Yep.
Chief Mike Brown said, Shireen, that he wants to analyze this. The department will analyze it through a lens of learning. Is that enough for you?
No, but I think that that's an appropriate framework to be thinking about it in. We have a mental health crisis in this state, and I think we particularly underserve our children in crisis. We don't have the magnitude of resources that we need for the number of kids that struggle in our state, certainly in our county. This is something that I am trying to figure out what we can do more on. Certainly, we have youth services through the county, but again, it's underfunded and it's just not enough. Considering the impact that that has in the people's lives in this county, I want us to do more, especially to offer intervention resources for children in crisis so that police are not the first number that people have to call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dan, we need to go to gripes and gratitude. And I don't know what's on your mind here, but we've got just over a minute left in the program.
Yeah. I don't really have a gripe, and I guess maybe everybody, you know, I until COVID is solved, let's just agree that we're going to stick with gratitudes. And I am legitimately grateful for my friends on both sides of the aisle. I mean, honestly, I would be a lesser lawmaker if I wasn't willing to learn and listen from all sides, even the crazy left.
Shireen, it looks like we got to hear some gratitude from you.
All right. So I am feeling particularly grateful for these, the cooler weather, being able to, you know, really be outside, enjoy time with family. I think that when we're thinking about maybe a winter that's going to be pretty hard, if you can have those kind of small gatherings with, you know, close, I have a COVID crew of about 3 people, being able to have dinner in our backyard, distance, they bring their own meals. That kind of connection has been really important to me. And I hope that people make a plan for how they're going to stay connected through what could be a pretty tough winter.
Mm. And I guess I'll just say, as I'm watching this virus and the season that we're in, I believe that governments are actually limited in what they can do. And we have to take personal responsibility to help people around us, help and choose ourselves to protect ourselves. And this virus is a complete bully. So we need to get it out of here by wearing masks. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner with Dan McKay and Shireen Gorbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, and stay safe.